This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Borscht Club on ORFM, where we stir up vibrant stories, rich traditions, and the voices of the Ukrainian community. Grab a seat. It's time to dive into something truly special. Hello, how are you today? We continue to talk about Chernobyl. April 26 marked 40 years since the tragedy that occurred in 1986 at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant, just 130 kilometers from Ukraine's capital, Kyiv. The consequences of this nuclear disaster are still felt around the world today. At the time, the Soviet regime responded with negligence, secrecy, and a complete disregard for human life. People living under Soviet occupation were not warned, not protected, and not told the truth. This led to thousands of deaths and long-term illnesses. The radioactive cloud spread far beyond the borders of the Soviet Union, threatening multiple countries. Chernobyl was not only a technological failure, it was a failure of a system built on lies and control. And 40 years later, that same mindset has not disappeared. In February 2025, Russia launched a drone attack on the Chernobyl site, damaging the new safe confinement, the structure that covers the destroyed reactor. This increased the risk around one of the most dangerous locations on the planet. This was not just an attack on infrastructure. It was a reckless act with potentially global consequences. Greenpeace activists carried out an action inside the confinement itself, directly beneath the structure that still contains radioactive materials. One of the participants was Polina Kolodyazhna. She researches Chernobyl, works on nuclear safety issues, and advocates for accountability in cases of nuclear terrorism. Together with other Greenpeace activists, she is calling for maximum sanctions against Rosatom and a complete halt to any international cooperation with it. Why this matters? Listen now to our interview with Polina Kolodyazhna on Borscht Club. Polina, welcome and thank you for joining us. Could you briefly introduce yourself and tell us what your work focuses on today?
My name is Polina Kolodyazhna. I work as a program leader of Greenpeace Ukraine. And my main topic is energy, and it's renewable energy and nuclear. So on renewables, I support municipalities to develop themselves, to reconstruct themselves, to modernize, to find opportunities and to install renewable sources, which are really vital for Ukraine today. And as on the nuclear direction, what I do together with my colleagues is constant monitoring of the situation in Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, which is still under Russian occupation for over 4 years. And now since 2022, we support local authorities and we help scientists not to, only to identify the consequences of Russian occupation of the zone, as Chernobyl were under occupation for over a month, but also now we help to, as an independent international organization, we help to investigate the consequences of the drone attack on a new safe confinement and to identify steps that should be done to repair new safe confinement.
I understand your father was involved in investigating Chernobyl. How was his experience shaped your own understanding of the disaster?
Yes, so my father, he used to be a scientist of the Institute of Cybernetics, and together with other scientists, he was investigating the influence of the external things on radionuclides and the behavior of radionuclides, especially in underground waters. He was doing these investigations for over 30 years ago, and now me as a Ukrainian and also as a part of Greenpeace Ukraine, I'm going to Chernobyl. I'm investigating together with local scientists the way how radionuclides behave in the cooling pond after 40 years of the disaster. And this is something that we as Ukrainians, we already have it. And I'm pretty sure that we will have it for a long, long time in the future. These consequences of catastrophes that have happened 40 years ago.
40 years after Chernobyl, do you believe the world has genuinely learned its lessons? From your perspective, what is the biggest myth people still believe about nuclear safety today?
From what I see now, I don't think that world learned anything. I would even say that we as Ukrainians, having such a heritage, we're still thinking about developing nuclear industry. And this is something that really shocks me a lot, because not only in Ukraine, but in the world, we have such examples. It's Mayak in the 50s, it's Three Iron Island, it's Chernobyl, it's Fukushima, the latest example of the way that we can't totally trust in nuclear. There's always something that can bring us to catastrophe. Even now during the war, Russians are attacking our substations in Ukraine. That also can lead to a new catastrophes, nuclear catastrophes. So we see that this industry, it's not reliable at all. And what is really reliable is renewables. And this is something that we are developing in Ukraine, and what I think all the world should do, to switch from nuclear to renewables.
During the Russian occupation of the Chernobyl site, what were the most dangerous actions that put nuclear safety at risk?
The most dangerous thing I would say is that although Chernobyl nuclear power plant is not operating since 2000s, but still you need to have electricity to run the storages. Although the power plant is not operating, not generating electricity, doesn't mean that it's not working. So you still have the storage with the spent fuel where you need electricity. You still has other things which needs electricity. So I would say during the occupation, one of the biggest thing was to maintain the power plant in a way as it should be. Other thing was that during this day when Russians came to Chernobyl, there were people who was working on a shift and they had to change this exact day. And in the end, they had to stay for much longer time, which is like a break of rules of how you behave and how much time you're staying in the nuclear power plant. That was another thing. And of course, the huge threat was that they just don't know what to do with the station. They don't know how to behave. So it was it. Plus to that, they destroyed local laboratories. For example, EcoCenter, it's the organization who is maintaining the whole Chernobyl zone, who are responsible for not letting the radiation, which is still there, to go outside the zone. And they do samplings all the time of the ground to see the same, how the radiation behaves, whether they should be worried about something or not. So it's like a huge monitoring system of radiation. And when Russians came, they entered this laboratory and they destroyed absolutely everything. They stolen computers, they stolen different information, different equipment, and what things that they couldn't take with them, they just destroyed. And that was another thing. And this laboratory, they're still collecting things from everywhere just to renew this laboratory for them to make their work possible.
Do Russian forces actually understand the scale of the threat? That in the event of another incident, they themselves would also be affected?
We are pretty sure that they knew it and that they know it and they are totally aware of that. We know that they were doing exercises, let's say, before occupation. So when they came, they knew where everything were located, where to go, what to do, because they were preparing for this operation, for the occupation of a nuclear power plant in Chernobyl and in Zaporizhia with the help of Russian state corporation Rosatom. So they were helping them to prepare to occupy nuclear power plants. And in the case of Chernobyl, although, as I said, it still needs the maintenance, but it's not operating, while occupying Zaporizhia, it was a huge risk because Zaporizhia nuclear power plant is the biggest power plant in Europe. They have 6 reactors and it was operating while they were occupying territories. And we know, we did this research together with other organization, Truth Hounds, where we showed that in this preparation as well, Rosatom took part. And that they helped the then Russian troops to catch people, especially local workers. They were doing tortures. They took in captivity some of these people, especially those who didn't want to cooperate. So we are pretty sure that they are absolutely aware of all the threats that are there because they were preparing for that.
Recently, the sarcophagus was damaged. Is it possible to fully restore it, or does the situation remain dangerous?
So, as you know, the Chernobyl catastrophe happened already 40 years ago. And due to 2 explosions in the 4th reactor, a huge amount of radionuclides were thrown in the atmosphere. But at the same time, there are different figures of how many radionuclides are still there in this destroyed 4th reactor. Some says that it's 95%. Some says that it's about 30%. We don't know and we can't calculate. But the thing is that even after 40 years, this radiation is still there. So during the first 10 months after explosion, after catastrophe, Soviet government organized a building of a sarcophagus or so-called object shelter to hide all this radiation. But as this construction was really hard to do, people couldn't stay there long, so they were using machines to build the sarcophagus. It wasn't stable. And all the world, they knew that they need to create something else in addition to this object shelter, because we don't know how much time it will stand. And if it will be destroyed, then all this radiation will go outside again. So sometime after this sarcophagus was created in 2000s, they started to calculate money to build something new instead of this sarcophagus, which will hide actually this sarcophagus. And 45 countries collected about 2 billion euros to build a big, huge construction, I would say, that would hide all this. And this object was called New Safe Confinement. It is the largest movement construction which were created in the world. It was built in 100 meters from the sarcophagus itself because there the level of radiation is huge and people can't stay there for a long time. And then with the use of rails, scientists put this new safe confinement above the sarcophagus. All these works were happening during years and years, and only in 2019 it was finished. So this new safe confinement was created with an idea that it will stand for 100 years and that it will help to dismantle the object shelter. So step by step to dismantle it and then to burial. So the thing with new safe confinement is that this is a huge metal construction. Scientists, while creating it, they were thinking about how to do in a way not to have any corrosion on this metal. So it was created with possibility to maintain the specific pressure inside, not to let radionuclides to go away, and also with the level of the humidity. And a year ago, in 2025, the 14th of February, Russians deliberately sent a drone which contained explosive things inside. And when it hit New Safe Confinement, it made a hole of 15 square meters in this construction, metal construction. And this drone hit not only the external but also internal parts of the construction. So in the end, it also damaged the machine room inside. Big fire started. The workers of emergency services were working for almost 3 weeks in a way to stop this fire and stop the melting of the membrane that was there. So only in 3 weeks they stopped it. But to do that, they made over 300 holes in the construction. So what we have now this huge arc made of steel, which is not operating, which has some holes that were closed before the winter, but which can't operate anymore as it should do. We have now a huge risk that if something will happen to this sarcophagus of or object shelter, if something will happen and some radionuclides will release, this arch, this new safe confinement won't be able to protect. We are in the situation when in some months or in some years, this steel can obtain corrosion. So the situation is the next, that we don't know yet what to do with it. So we are now trying to calculate, the government tries to calculate the amount of money that is needed, but also the ways how to repair this construction. Because as I said, there is a huge amount of radiation there and people can't stay there for a long time. And this is the biggest problem with it. And it is even hard to calculate or to find out which steps should be taken to repair it. So we are here now with this huge, huge movable construction, which can't properly protect the whole world. And all that is because of actions of Russians, which knew perfectly well where new safe confinement is, where the fourth reactor is, not only from Soviet times, but also because they were here in 2022. So we can say for 100% that they did this deliberately in a way to continue their bringing threat and these terroristic actions to Ukraine, but also to all the world.
We know that Russian forces reportedly dug trenches in contaminated soil and moved heavy equipment through the Red Forest. From an environmental and legal perspective, how would you classify these actions?
We classify it as a terroristic act, as a bringing new threats to the world. And the worst thing of all that is that, as I already mentioned, Russian corporate state organization Rosatom helped them. They helped them to prepare for these actions. They helped them to occupy territories in Chernobyl. They helped them to occupy territories in Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. They helped them to find out where to send missiles in a way to bring this threat. But at the same time, the world is still operating, cooperating with Rosatom. We see that each day new and new countries are signing contracts, are signing memorandums of cooperation, are signing some future plans to build something, are inviting them for that. In Europe, for example, we know that they are in close cooperation with France. They give them enriched uranium. We know that they are now starting to build a new reactor, SPAKS 2, in Hungary. We know that they are signing new memorandums with Atomic Agency. So although they are doing such an horrible things that are bringing huge threat to all the world, they are still there cooperating, finding new partners, signing new contracts, gaining new money, and obtaining new possibilities of influence the world without any sanctions. Even more, we know that the head of Atomic Agency, Grossi, is going to Russia, is going to all new constructions of Rosatom, congratulating them and shaking hands and agreeing in new cooperations. And all that in parallel to occupied Zaporizhia and on new threat for the world.
You have already touched on this, but I'd still like to ask, how close did the world come to another potential nuclear incident during this war? Are there any real mechanisms in place to hold Russia accountable for creating nuclear risk on this scale?
So for the first question, we were pretty close in March 2022 when Russians occupied Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. We were pretty close in 2023 when Russians destroyed Kakhovka Dam and Zaporizhia lost part of the water with which they were cooling the fuel. But since September 22, we've managed to push Russians to put Zaporizhia in a cold shutdown, which means that station is not generating electricity anymore. But as I said, even the closed or in a shutdown, station needs electricity and needs water. So as for now, the risk is lower. But at the same, we have new threats. For example, when Russians deliberately destroy the lines of electricity, which are connected to Zaporizhia. That have happened in autumn 2025, for example, when Zaporizhia nuclear power plant was staying without external electricity for over a month. It is really risky, this operation, and we know why they were doing that, because they wanted to connect Zaporizhia nuclear power plants to the lines which they built in occupied territories. They were building a line of 200 kilometers from Mariupol and Melitopol that they were planning to connect to Zaporizhia. And while doing all that, Zaporizhia nuclear power plant stayed without external electricity supply for over a month, running only by diesel generators. And that was also a really bad thing, I would say. But the same as the station is now on the cold shutdown, that decreases this level of risk a lot. As for now, the situation is, of course, still there, so it's still dangerous, and it will be dangerous until Russians won't leave Zaporizhia, until they deoccupy the territories and give Zaporizhia nuclear power plant to Ukraine, to those who really knows how to operate the station, who knows how to maintain it, and who knows what to do with it.
And specifically, are there mechanisms to hold Russia accountable for nuclear terrorism?
Of course, we need to put external international pressure on them. We need to put more and more sanctions on them. We need to stop cooperate with Rosatom, terroristic corporation. I would say the biggest terroristic corporation in the world. When they will not sign this new contract, when they will receive less money, they won't be able to continue this war. At some point, they will need to stop. But to come to this point, we need to put this pressure on them.
For people living far away, in places like New Zealand, for example, why should what's happening at Chernobyl still matter for them?
We know that after Chernobyl explosion, even in Japan or even farther, they felt the consequences. Monitors showed the increased level of radiation. Those who are staying closer, they obtained problems with the health. There were a lot of deaths because of Chernobyl. So in our current history, I would say, especially after Fukushima, we know that radiation doesn't have any borders. It's not a problem of a country or of a continent. It's a problem of all human beings. And we need to understand that, and we need to think about decreasing these huge risks for us, but also for our children, grandchildren. Because nuclear risk, it's not something that today is here and tomorrow it won't be there. With spent fuel, with new plans on modular reactors, I would say, we not only increase this risk, but we also put responsibility on the shoulders of our descendants. And we need to move into something that can cope life as it was this winter in Ukraine, when we saw that renewables really can save lives. So I would say that this is the most important, to think and to consider nuclear as something that can come to you even if it's not on your neighbors, if it's not installed near your neighborhood.
And finally, is there anything that can realistically protect the world from this kind of threat?
I would say that the only way is to stop developing nuclear technologies.
Thank you, Polina, for being with us today. Chernobyl is a warning that came at an enormous human cost. The tragedy was born out of the Soviet system that hid the truth and treated people as expendable. The Soviet system once hid a catastrophe. Today's Russia is actively creating new ones. Different era, same mindset. And if the world still chooses to treat this as just another conflict, it risks learning the same lesson twice, at a much higher cost. Thank you for being with us today. I'd really love to stay connected with you, my listeners, beyond this program. If there is a topic you care about or something you'd like us to explore, please don't stay silent, reach out. You can find me on Facebook as Olya Vyazenko, or send me an email, olha.vyazenko@gmail.com. I read every message and I genuinely pay attention to what you share. Some of the strongest episodes come from your ideas, your questions, and your stories. If something in today's program stayed with you or challenged you, tell me. This space isn't just mine, it's ours, and your voice can help shape what comes next. Take care and see you next time. Thank you for tuning in to Borscht Club on ORFM. Stay connected with us and listen to our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and oar.org.nz. This is your host Olya Vyazenko, wishing you joy and a delicious day ahead. До зустрічі! See you next time!
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.